save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Give your walls the most advanced protection with Pittsburgh's Paramount Interior Paint and Primer in one. It's scuff, scrub, and wear resistant, while also blocking stains and delivering true one coat coverage. Choose from thousands of color options and refresh your space for spring. View our entire selection of paint and accessories today on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to find great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Spring Sale and get 35% off paints and stains March 13th through the 23rd. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Listen, when the baseball season is over,
yeah.
When football is over,
yeah.
And that town begins to fully attenuate its sights on the Philadelphia 76ers,
yeah.
That better be a positive story.
They boot them against the Spurs like they already were in it, yes. I think that was a home opener. They're just like, no.
They were booing and beat. Like, this is, listen, we can argue about whether or not that is wise or pathological or whatever, but that's just Philly.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to Take Line. I'm your host, Jason Concepcion. This week, we're going NBA heavy and athletic heavy. The great, the wonderful, the best ever do it, Zach Harper, NBA insider extraordinaire, and of course, one of the great hosts of the Athletic NBA show is my co-host today as we dissect the early season struggles of the Philadelphia 76ers and the Los Angeles Lakers. Then Zach's fellow NBA insider at the Athletic, John Hollinger, the creator of PER, former front office executive for the Memphis Grizzlies, one of the great analysts looking at the NBA today, will join us, and he will be giving us some of his thoughts, his way, way too early thoughts on the first week of the NBA season. Zach, it is way too early to make sweeping pronouncements.
Agreed.
About things like, oh, the Knicks are better than we thought.
Mm-hmm.
The Jazz are out of the Wemby sweepstakes because they're playing too well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it is definitely not too early to make very, very authoritative statements about the Philadelphia 76ers and the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers we expected.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the Sixers because, folks, everything coming out of Philly that is not Phillies related is bad right now. And Eagles related, obviously. Like, it's bad.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I don't like to overreact,
right?
I like to have some fun here, but I, for the most part, I'm so vain that I want to have measured takes on the NBA,
sure.
Not swing one way or the other at the drop of
Same.
A hat because I want to be correct, right? Like, that's how vain I am. I would rather be correct than biased or whatever. I had in the power rankings on the Athletic for opening week, I think the Sixers sixth in the NBA for like current status and everything. They were in a tier I called like brink of contention. Like, they're right there. We just got to see this and this, and then they're going to be contenders and everything.
Yep.
I dropped them to 16th this week. I'm done with them. They're done. They're going to fire Doc, right? They probably wanted to fire Doc last year.
That man's seat, you can't measure the temperature of that seat right now.
I'm curious, who do you think has a hotter seat right now? Is it Doc Rivers or Will Hardy? Because the Jazz are supposed to be losing, and this dumb guy keeps coaching them up to win. So it's Lauri Markkanen and...
Because I think that Ainge has moves, right? It's just start trading guys. You know, like, these guys are playing too well, and start trading the guys who are playing well. Will Hardy, you know, he's doing what he's supposed to do. I think it's Doc. I think right now the only question is, what is Mike D'Antoni's schedule for the next 3 weeks? Like, is he around?
If you're Doc and you just see Mike like at a sandwich shop somewhere in Philly, are you like, what are you doing here? Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Like, you don't work here anymore. You're not an assistant under Brett Brown anymore. Like, you got to go.
I mean, I think that it's easy to overreact, right? But when Doc said last week, after a shocking loss to the Spurs, shocking loss.
Yeah.
A team, again, there's a team who may be playing too well to truly tank for Victor Wembanyama, said We weren't ready to play. I can't do it in the gravelly voice that he said. We weren't ready to play. To which, and usually, you know, Twitter, I don't put much stock in Twitter snipers and the things. I'm a long avowed Twitter sniper myself, and I'm just talking shit most of the time.
Yeah.
That said, everybody quote tweeted that report with, well, whose job is it to get them ready to play? I'm just wondering. Is that not you? Doc.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a man who doesn't want to do it anymore, right?
For sure. I mean, he, like, they don't practice. He just golfs.
Well, that's well known.
Yeah, but that's been for years. Like, you think he wouldn't love to get in another couple of rounds every week? Like, of course he would. Instead of getting on a plane, like, he could just go to, like, the Bel Air Country Club, be back in it. Like, that's what he wants. And so I look at it, and there was a point in the Sixers-Spurs game where I thought, oh, they don't have an answer for Devin Vassell.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, shouldn't be the plight of the Sixers team. I think that it's weird, too, because, like, James Harden is playing really well offensively, right? Like, we know the defense, and yes, Rockets fans, he once was a good post defender, four possessions a game. We don't need to put, like, the rest of the defense is laughable at best.
They love to say that. Yeah.
But he's playing well. He's cooking. Like, he's getting to the free throw line enough. He's getting in the mid-range and knocking it down. He's hitting threes. Like, he's doing everything. But I don't think Joel knows how to play with that guy. Like, it's not that he can't learn, but you look, and he had a switch with, I want to say, like, Wes Matthews on him at one point, and James had a mismatch on the perimeter, so he just starts cooking, and Joel just kind of, like, walked slowly to the dunker spot in the baseline, but there was no, like, purpose with the movement, and he looks so slow right now. Maybe it's an injury, maybe it's lethargy, like, I don't know what it is, but, like, he doesn't look locked in. Like, he has the most boring 27-13 to open a week, where it just, like, the numbers don't really mean anything. He has no impact. And I they have to figure out, like, the dynamic of that team.
They've talked about, you know, like, obviously he did not play in Eurobasket and was dealing with stuff over the summer. And the Sixers have been open about that his conditioning is just not going to be there for a little while, which is concerning. That said, this is a team with Tyrese Maxey and James Harden in your backcourt. They're going to leak points. They're going to just be squirting points.
Yeah.
And your answer to that is we have Joel Embiid back there. And that has not been any kind of answer at all. And that part of it, to your point, it just, like, he doesn't look engaged or like he wants to do it. And furthermore, this is just a team with, like, parts that I don't know how they match. You have one guy who really, really wants to run and who is most effective when running, Tyrese Maxey.
Yeah.
You have a rest of the team that is just really not, like, Tobias Harris may be the fastest guy of the guys who play, like, a lot. They just are not going to run. James Harden wants to dribble the ball 800 times. Yet this is a team that really needs to kind of swing it around to get Joel posted up in the position that he needs. It's just, I don't, it's bad.
Yeah.
It looks bad right now, Zach.
It's funny, too, because, like, in the preseason, there was a point where, like, people were like, man, they're bringing Matisse Thybulle off the bench. I'm like, like, that's like if the Thunder brought Andre Robertson off the bench, right? Like, this is not really like a, oh my God, look at all the depth we have. I thought they had more depth than they do coming into it. But we're at a point where when they play Paul Reed over Montrezl Harrell, I'm like, oh, thank God. Like, they're at least going to have a little bit of defensive effort out there for the center position. Like, there was a, you know, you talk about Embiid not being really, like, engaged. There was a play in the Bucks game where Giannis, I think it was off an offensive rebound. They were kind of reset into the defense. And Giannis, like, was in the right corner. Like, he had migrated to the right corner and Embiid was on him on the switch. And it's not like he was hugging up on him in the right corner, but he's, like, a foot outside of the paint.
Yeah.
On the other side, the ball comes and it's just an easy drive. He didn't even look to rotate. Like, that's literally what you're there for. You're the big one. The big one's supposed to rotate and get in the way of that. And, like, you can't, like, be mad at, like, or be like, worry about Giannis in the corner like that. So there's not that decision that you made. Like, you were just like, I'm good. I don't want to do this.
How long do you give Doc? How long do you think, it happens?
I think it does. Like, if I set the over under at Thanksgiving,
right,
I think I'd take the under because I think that's something you have to handle sooner rather than later if this continues.
I agree because the East is stacked and you just can't let this go too far.
Yeah.
Because I don't, this is not a Sixers team that really looks like it has the ability to kind of, like, claw its way back. And furthermore, it's also not a team that you really, bad vibes really affect this team.
Yeah.
We're talking Philly, a town that is ready, willing, and able to turn on this squad. And God forbid, listen, when the baseball season is over, when football is over, and that town begins to fully attenuate its sights on the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah.
That better be a positive story.
They boot him against the Spurs. Like, they already were in it. Yes. I think that was a home opener. They're just like, no.
They were booing Embiid. Like, this is, listen, we can argue about whether or not that is wise or pathological or whatever, but that's just Philly.
Yeah.
So, folks, I think it needs to happen. I agree with you. I would take the under.
Yeah.
I would say they go, if they open first 10 games, if they start like 3-7 or even 5-5, if it's a bad 5-5,
right.
I think that it's probably curtains for Doc Rivers.
I think they desperately need the Phillies to win the World Series.
Really do.
And the Eagles, if it's anything less than the conference championship, the Sixers team can't handle the reign of horror that is going to befall this roster every single home game.
Okay, let's talk about the other team about which it is absolutely appropriate to make sweeping statements about 3 games, 4 games, 1 week into the season, and that is the LA Lakers, who there is nothing that they can do.
Yeah.
That there's nothing they can do. I mean, every single day, every single game is followed by 6, 7, 8 viral plays that get blown up on social media that is like Russell Westbrook bricking an 18-footer with 20 seconds left in the shot clock.
What?
Russell Westbrook blowing a layup. Patrick Beverley running around like a madman and then shooting off the side of the backboard. People standing 15 feet away from every single Lakers player. I mean, and there's nothing they can do.
No.
Zach, there's no move that they have.
I have no skin in this game with the Lakers. I don't hate the Lakers. Like, in any way, like, I don't care. If they're good, great. If they're not, I'll make jokes. Like, I don't care. So I'm not one of those people that, like, takes joy in watching this. When, against Portland, when the Lakers had a 2-point lead with like 29 seconds left in the game and the ball, and Russ jacked up a mid-range shot, I literally yelled at my TV in my bedroom, like, what are you doing? Like, I felt so upset in that moment. And now I'm trying to picture myself as a Laker fan and like what that moment must have been. And Russ is going to get scapegoated. Like, this team sucks. It's not just Russ. He maybe embodies some of that, but like, AD's not that guy. LeBron is just a scorer at this point. Like, he's so bad defensively.
Yeah.
But we just marvel like, oh, you're 20, gonna catch Kareem, like, which is fine. Like, that's the vibe of this Lakers season.
I mean, that's what the mission is gonna be really soon. We're gonna go for that soon.
You have to. Like, they have to focus on that. Jason, I have seen Andre Miller make more baskets on an errant alley-oop pass than I've seen three-pointers go in for this Lakers team so far this season. Like, it is...
If you told me if they've hit 3 total three-point... I don't know what the number is, but if you told me it was 3, I'd believe you. I'd believe you.
Here's the... Look, check out these numbers, okay? LeBron, 25.9% from 3. Anthony Davis, 20%. Lonnie Walker IV, 17.6%. Patrick Beverley, 21.4%. Russell Westbrook, 8.3%.
No!
Austin Reeves, 28.6%. Juan Toscano-Anderson, 12.5%. Kendrick Nunn, 23.1%. It takes to the 9th most attempts on the team, which is Matt Ryan at 5, to get to a 40% shooter.
You know, LeBron famously said that we don't have lasers on this team.
They don't have a slingshot. Lasers.
They don't have a slingshot. They don't have a spitball. They don't have anything. And listen, I'm not going to present myself as some sort of basketball genius, but it does seem to me when you don't have shooters, the blueprint is defense. Like, we're going to grind it down.
Sure.
We're going to make it work for everything. And because we're not going to be able to outscore you, certainly not efficiently. And this is also a team that's not going to do that.
Right. Well, Jason, you know, if you look at this team and see, like, oh, there's really no shooters on this roster, would you take 40 a game? Would you take 43s a game? Because that's what they're doing. They look at this roster and say, jack them up, boys.
That is the part of it that doesn't make sense. Why is Russell Westbrook taking 6 threes a game? Why does that happen at all? I do actually feel bad now for the way, because he is not specifically the only problem.
No.
Right. But he is like the symbol for it for some reason.
Yes, he is the symbol for it. And listen, we could relitigate the deal that brought him here and the fact that Pelinka got an extension. All that. Forget all that.
Sure.
What do we do now is the question. And the answer is, I don't know. Like, even if you attach the draft picks, which I think the Lakers are wise to think about not attaching to anything and are protecting like the crown jewels right now for the long rumored deal that would deliver Buddy Hield and, I don't know, Miles Turner, I guess.
Yeah.
That, what does that do? Does that a play in maybe? Like, I'm not sure what that does, because the other part of this that is really and truly scary is that LeBron and AD are still top 25 guys, right?
Sure.
They've slipped down that ranking. And when you do that, like, the air up there is very thin.
Mm-hmm.
So coming down, going from like the fourth best guy to the eighth best guy, that's a drop. And I think it's a drop that significantly alters the ceiling of this squad.
I think like a potential Buddy Hield, Miles Turner trade, it at least gives them a lineup.
Right. There's a lineup
that I'm like, sure. Like that works. Right. If I'm Steve Kerr or Bob Myers or Steph Curry or Andre Iguodala, I would go up to Draymond Green after every single Lakers game and say, I fucking dare you to sign with that team this summer.
Yeah.
I dare you. Like, go do it. Like, we'll replace you with Kuminga for it. We don't give a shit. We dare you to go sign with that team because they're going to give you the max because of Clutch.
I mean, it's really what they need is another, you know, low double-digit three-point shooter.
We're shooting 21% of the season. What'll fix that? Let's get Draymond in here. Let him mix it up with his backpack jump shot.
Like, listen, if the Lakers could do the thing that they really need to do, they would just blow it up entirely.
Yeah.
Focus on catching Kareem. Okay, that's going to be our narrative this season.
Mm-hmm.
And just, that's it. And then just blow this team up. Blow it up.
Do you think that, I realize, like, I think I have a skewed view on this because I've never really been an AD guy. And so as I see him, like, be borderline useless out there in terms of, like, getting the team to wins, I feel vindicated finally. Like, that championship really brought me down. It's not like I've never thought he's bad. I've just been like, and I think I can be honest about this. It was when he was coming out of Kentucky, people were like, oh, he's like Kevin Garnett. And I was like, slow your fucking roll.
Yeah,
okay.
Like,
okay, this,
like,
yeah, like, all right. This is like, look, I know KG's a piece of shit and everything, but I love him. And like, that was my childhood. And like, don't you dare.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this dude's nothing like KG. So I do feel vindicated that I never really bought in. And this is him at his peak and everything. And the championship definitely took a hit to that agenda. But are there teams that would look at AD right now and say, not like, oh, will we trade for him? I think you would trade for him. But what is like a, like, could you get what the Jazz got for Donovan Mitchell? Like, you're not getting what
you got
for, for Gobert. You're not getting anything close to what you gave up for him in terms of that deal to New Orleans. So, like, what is he, 29? Like, what are you giving up for a 29-year-old Anthony Davis at this point who doesn't seem to affect winning in the way that you would expect?
I completely agree. And then to your point, because of the way Victor is going to warp the lower end of the league this season.
Yeah.
You're really only working with teams like Sacramento, you know, like teams on the bubble who want to be good and are too good to tank.
Right.
And, you know, but then again, I don't know why Sacramento would do that, considering the kind of like good vibes they have around the team.
Well, they suck.
They suck, but like there's glimmers there. And it is also you could see that ownership group being like, push all in, let's go, here it is. Now is the time.
what is pushing all in for the
I don't know.
What is that? Because I thought it was when they acquired Kevin Huerter. Like, I thought it was like, oh shit, they're going for it. Like,
I don't know. You know, but like to your point, I don't know what the market for AD is right now, considering his injury history, his age, where he appears to be in his career, and the fact that, you know, like Russell Westbrook, I think he sees himself in a certain way and carries himself in a certain way that's probably not amenable to whatever team would want him.
There was a great question in, I think, a group chat that you're in as well, where our friend Nick Nampe asked about the Blazers. Leave the contracts out of it.
Right.
Who's the worst Blazer you would trade straight up for Russell Westbrook? And I think they came to a consensus of it was either Keon Johnson or Greg Brown. And I think it's a great exercise to do for every team of like, let's pretend you don't have to match contracts. Like, who's the worst player on this team? Like, what's the lowest you would go on that depth chart to trade for Russell Westbrook? It's like for the Blazers, if it's above Keon Johnson or Greg Brown's ability, they're like, nah, it's not worth it.
Well, I mean, I'd do Julius Randle for AD right now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, agreed.
But I'd also trade him for Draymond Green. I would. Yeah. He's playing well. I shouldn't. Julius is playing really well right now and looks.
You know what? I want to say this about the Knicks. I was very skeptical. I'm still skeptical, but the energy and the vibe that is there the first two games, I'm all in on. Like, that's what I wanted to see out of those guys
right early
on. We'll see if that sustains, because I don't know how you can be a player on that team and look at Tom Thibodeau's beard every day and be like, yeah, I'm going to buy in, because that beard, that's one of the worst beards we've ever seen. But the vibes of this team, the energy, like, it through two games, I know it's dumb, but like through two games, I'm like, that's that. I don't like, it doesn't feel like last year at all.
Like, we've got good problems. Like, when will Hartenstein be starting? Like, those are the kind of things. And sadly, because the East is so stacked, it's like unclear to me how much better actually in terms of wins and losses they're actually going to be than last year's team. But
they're
just so much more fun to watch. I want to make an admission similar to your AD admission.
Okay.
I've always kind of been a little bit of a Russ hater. Like, I've always enjoyed the swagger, the courageousness.
Yeah.
But also, like, you know, as a person who has watched basketball my whole life, bad basketball plays always, like, just annoy me. You know, not passing to Kevin Durant late in games.
Yeah.
It always just really, really frustrated me. And I got to say, I think when the story of Russell Westbrook is all written, one of the things that will become obvious is how at every stage of, at every like fork in the road point of his career, people bet on Russ and lost tragically, dramatically. Going back to, you know, it's been overblown, but going back to the Hart or Russ and Ibaka kind of decision that OKC made, and clearly they picked the wrong thing there. And I think if you just move it forward, I think that people have been betting on Russ for a while, and it's the returns are only getting worse and worse and worse.
It's crazy that I think the Wizards are the only team that's like really won here.
Right?
And they had to give up a first with John Wall to make that deal, but he dragged them to the playoffs the 1 year he was there. That second half of the COVID shortened season was insane, because they were literally like,
the first half of the season was very, very rough.
They had missed like two straight weeks.
Yeah.
So they had to make up all these games. And Russ was just like, I'm built for this. I will, like, you want me to play when other guys won't play and like put up stats? I'll do this. I'll get us to wins. They got through the play-in. They got to the first round. They got bounced. And then they traded him for like KCP and Kuzma and everything. Like, that's the best Westbrook, like, experience return start to finish that has been like completely positive and not like a dramatic drop off.
Well, I think that's the blueprint for what you have to do with Russ now. Like, if you want to get the most effectiveness out of him, you turn over the keys to him completely.
Yeah.
And come what may, you know, I think it was the first part of that Wizard season was really, really shaky until he kind of like shook the rust off and started doing the thing. And that mostly involved like Russ just being Russ.
Yeah.
But you also have to be very, very clear-eyed about the ceiling of that kind of play. And it's a low playoff berth. And it is definitely not a championship. And it's not even the second round.
No, definitely not. But you also have to be careful, because if you bring him off the bench, he'll get injured. Because his body isn't built that way?
I guess.
That's my favorite. That's the like early leader in the clubhouse for just quotables, right?
So what you're referencing is a quote by Russ. He was asked if coming off the bench at all played into like a hamstring tweak that he suffered. And he said, yeah, you know, like I didn't even know how to warm up, he said, which to me, listen, ask any number of players that you play with right now who come off the bench. You could, hey, what do you do to warm up when you guys come off the bench? That's one, like, if we're being sincere, if that's sincerely like a take. And then two, like, you're the first player that's ever transitioned from the starting role to the bench. Like, it's just, I feel bad.
His answer was absolutely. Not maybe. Not, yeah, like, you know what? He said, absolutely. No doubt. No notes. Just off the bench, hamstring.
Well, let's bring on noted NBA expert, one of the greatest to ever do it, John Hollinger, to help us talk about these issues and more.
¿Quieres ¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
The season openers are in the books, and the 2022 NBA season is underway. Here to discuss this season's storylines as they exist right now, the Wembanyama tankers, and everything in between, is John Hollinger, senior NBA columnist for The Athletic. John, welcome back to Take Line. John, welcome to the program. What a entertaining first week of the NBA season. Any surprises jump out to you right off the bat?
Yeah, I mean, Utah inadvertently winning 3 games, I think, certainly.
How dare
right?
you?
Stands
what?
Out.
What? How dare you?
What is going on here?
Submerge that fine franchise.
Yeah. Yeah, John, Will Hardy hot seat or what's going on?
No, you're screwing it all up, dude. What are you doing?
It feels like, you know, obviously if they're too good, there's various things that Ainge could do, but that it feels like that's a squad that will come down to earth at some point. No,
they'll get to the number they need to get to in due time.
Yeah.
And, you know, the flattened lottery odds though, really change this because you just need to achieve a certain level of badness. Mm-hmm. You don't need to humiliate yourself the way the process Sixers did, let's say, in order to get roughly the same potential reward, because the bottom 6 or 7 teams are going to have roughly similar odds. So it's not quite the race to the bottom that it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
On a scale of 1 to process, you know, the process Sixers went 3-0. They beat the Heat behind Michael Carter Williams, like, to start that season.
They did. Yeah. No, Tony Roten had a triple-double, and, like, we were getting shit about it. Like, how would you trade that guy?
Oh, my God. All right, I just want to do 20 quick minutes on Tony Roten, and then you guys talk whatever you want. But so I'm wondering, like, is that more surprising, or is it Lauri Markkanen and Kelly Olynyk, like, can't be stopped as a duo, and there's just nothing anyone else can do about it?
I actually thought Utah would be okay to begin the season until they start trading some more guys, because they do have a lot of offensive talent on this team. Right now, you look at the stats, they're sort of benefiting from Jedi three-point defense, and that's going to even itself out. But there's enough offense on that team to kind of stick around 500 for the first half of the season. But they'll work it out. Don't you worry.
They'll figure it out. To that end, Baxter Holmes of ESPN had a story that dropped late last week in which it quoted NBA Commissioner Adam Silver as saying, you know, we put teams on notice regarding the tanking for French prospect Victor Wembanyama. And that, you know, one of the things that they had talked about was relegation, and Adam didn't really expound on in what context he brought that up. But my initial reaction to that was, come on, man, get serious. Why are you even bringing up a thing that will never, ever, ever happen?
Relegation seems totally hopeless to me. Like, it would completely change how the league operates, basically, because there would be this class of teams that sort of operated in the netherworld between the first division and the second division, but couldn't go all the way in on investing in their teams because they knew the chance of relegation was out there. So you'd sort of have the core teams that always stayed up the way you do in English football. And then you'd have this second tier of teams that can maybe get relegated and maybe not. Like, I mean, you know, theoretically, yes, Manchester City could get relegated, but, like, you know, what, their budget is like 5 times everyone else's. Like, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch Lakers versus Maine Red Claws on Twitch next season.
And then, like, with the salary cap and everything, like, like, okay, you've been relegated to the G League, but you still have $120 million payroll for the next year. Like, no, there are too many structural impossibilities in how the NBA operates.
I'd love to see Fort Wayne put up the Lakers for a night. And just how are we going to make that work?
How are you going to deal with the Mad Ants on the back-to-back with Sioux Falls?
I want to see the Lakers actually staying in the Best Western Ramkota Inn in Sioux Falls, where everyone stays when they play there.
Oddly specific, John. That is a man who has traveled the G League. I wonder, it feels like Adam Silver at that point is just the dad saying, I'll turn this car around. No intention. You're still going to the theater, but you're still going to the movies, but like they're not going to turn this car around. And I don't know, John, like you're a smart person. Like I've always just said, just even the odds 1-14. If we're going to keep the draft, like just even the odds 1-14, like it used to be. And the argument against that is always, well, what if someone tanks out of the playoffs to get a pick? I'm like, it's still just a 1-14 shot. And I don't know how many like franchises, especially like greedy owners, are going to go out there and say like, yeah, well, I'll pass up on a round of playoff revenue for whatever this is.
Yeah, nobody's going to tank out of the playoffs just for a 7% chance at the top pick. I think people did not like the previous format because they felt like it, because they did do that for a while. And the teams at the bottom were very salty about it. And they just felt like it helped teams that didn't really need to be helped. And so I'm okay with the somewhat staggered odds we have now, where it's highly likely that the top pick will go to a bad team. But you don't necessarily like the marginal value of Oklahoma City trying to lose one more game than San Antonio. Like it just isn't there. So I think the way they figured this out is pretty good right now.
But even as unbiased media members, like we can all agree we're all rooting for the Lakers to get the number one pick and then the Pelicans to get to swap in. And like that's the best case scenario, right? For this whole thing shaking out.
Oh, of course. Of course. Yeah, absolutely. And Zach, I do have to disagree with one thing you said, though. You started this off by saying, John, you're a smart guy. And I just need to call bullshit.
Relative to the one you're talking to here, because like you start talking like, I don't know, cosines and tangents and bullshit. And I'm just like, I don't know what's going on here.
They would have to build a statue of Robert Pelinka somewhere in New Orleans, if indeed that came to pass.
I think you have to change Pierre the Pelican to just a remake of Rob Pelinka, right?
The New Orleans Pelinkas. I think you name the franchise after him. Because not only are you talking about a New Orleans team that, like, could easily win 50 games this year. I mean, they look, you know, hopefully Zion stays healthy, took a knock in the last game, getting blocked at the rim. But that is a team that is laden with talent and has good vibes around it for the first time in what seems like several seasons. If they added Wembanyama, forget about it. God. Name the team the New Orleans Pelinkas after that. John, tell us why, if you could, why is Victor such a generous, why are teams willing to just like throw it all away for a lottery ticket to get this kid?
So I saw him in Vegas play twice and he was unbelievable. I mean, he's 7'4". He's sort of a cross between Kristaps Porzingis, Ralph Sampson, and Dirk Nowitzki because his shot is just butter. Like it is so easy and so pure and so fluid at that size. It's incredible to see. He can really handle the ball for his size. Seems very mature and put together too. Like just watching his interviews and stuff. And so basically, like there were 30 teams there who spent 5 days looking for red flags and they didn't find any. You know what I mean? They're looking at this guy trying to ask themselves, okay, what's the catch? And there's no catch.
It's stunning to like, because everyone's been like, this is a guy you create in a video game, right? And and it's stunning to look at this. Like, it's funny because I looked at Chet Holmgren and I'm like, he'll be a good player, but there's something about it I don't like. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, I think it's just like he's not as fluid as I would want him to be on the perimeter. And, you know, the slight body build and everything. Victor Wembanyama is not quite that skinny. He looks a little more built out, but he's like even more stretched out than Holmgren. And I'm just like, fuck yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
Like, that's the guy. Like, if you're not tanking for him, you're negligent.
Yeah. It reminds me of when I, as a kid, I first saw Shaq and obviously completely different body types. But it was that, oh, this just looks like a regular sized person that you scaled up complete to 7'1".
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, again, like Victor is a little skinnier than that, but he looks to your point about like Dirk or a player, like he has moves that a smaller player would use. Like he's got this fade to the corner, which I'm like, do you even need that? Like, why did you even work on that? Like, you don't need it.
Yeah.
But and it's the way he moves and the grace with which he carries himself. And then again, the kind of frame that he has, where he just looks like a very tall guy who you scaled up in a natural way to be 7'4" or whatever it is. And he looks like he has complete control of the way his body moves. He doesn't look like one of these guys who had, you know, a late teens growth spurt where it's all of a sudden they're like, oh, how do I move my legs and arms? There is none of that. He looks like he came out of the womb 7'4".
He's so comfortable,
It's unreal.
Yeah, the absence of one thing kind of stuck out to me. Like, I don't think I saw him fall down.
Wow.
Yeah. Roy Hibbert used to fall down once every two plays. Like, Roy Hibbert was averaging the most fall downs in history.
Jim McElvain for the old-timers.
Jim McElvain was just a slip and slide. Like, he was just always going to the ground.
It was unbelievable.
I was going to say, you know, lost in all the talk about how absolutely tragicomic the Lakers are, and I'll get your take on that in a second, is the Clippers, who maybe ISO too much, but who John Wall is giving them everything they could have hoped for at this early stage of the season. Bringing Kawhi off the bench, we'll see how that works going forward, but that looks like a good team.
All right. So let me give you a trivia question.
Sure.
You know who's 30th in offense right now at our very long season after three games?
I'll just guess the Lakers. Yeah.
Lakers, the LA Lakers. They're like way, way in last. You know who's 29th?
Is it the Clippers?
It is. Yes.
Yeah, but the vibes are like a top 15 offense. Yeah.
The vibes.
It's interesting how they're using Kawhi, you know, because what they're basically decided to do is just skip his first turn in the rotation almost and just pretend as if it happened and then like sub him back in the middle of the second quarter, except he never played the first quarter, and just continue from there as though things were totally normal. It's a little weird with the club. I don't want to overreact to three games almost, anyway, high or low. They are built to kind of need another guy, Norm Powell, they were hoping would be that guy, another guy to step up and score two. And they haven't really gotten that yet. Powell has been struggling. Reggie Jackson hasn't really gotten going. John Wall has been really encouraging. He sat out the one game with the back-to-back, but so that's been a really nice sign for them. Overall, like, I like this Clippers team. I think they're deep. I think they can match up a lot of ways. I'm a little worried that they only have one real center, but they're sort of making it work so far. And Kawhi will eventually play more minutes, but as they go through the regular season, it's definitely still a little bit of like a work in progress feel with them.
For like the melting pot in the East that is like Cleveland, Toronto, Atlanta, Chicago, who do you believe in the most and who do you believe in the least out of those four?
So least is Chicago. That's an easy one. I didn't believe in them even healthy, but with no Lonzo, with Zach LaVine and the knee issue, I don't think they're deep enough. I don't think they have enough shooting. I don't really like their guards that much. I mean, Caruso's a great defender, but in terms of like offense and creation and whatnot, there's just too much of a load on DeRozan right now. Of that group, who I like the most, I'm going to say Cleveland. I think, you know, they've been able to play pretty well even without Garland these last couple games. I worry a little about their depth too in their small forward position, but with that Allen Mobley front court combo, just putting a lid on the rim, I think really helps them. And then having Mitchell, obviously, to be the kind of go-to scorer for them, I just think they have a lot of different ways to beat you now. I think they'll be really good.
Does the Bulls medical staff need to stop injecting metal filings into the knees of their players?
Is that what they've been doing?
I believe so. I think that's what they pulled out of Lonzo's knee. Yeah.
That explains a lot. Yeah.
We talked about the Clippers and their lack of centers, their former backup center, Isaiah Hartenstein, now a player for the New York Knicks. One of my favorite sub plots of the season has been a Reddit user whose name escapes me now, who I have to say did accurately predict that Nikola Jokic would be like an MVP level player back in the day.
Okay.
Has now predicted that Hartenstein will similarly rise to the level of an NBA All-Star.
That's optimistic.
All that aside.
All-Star, like a guy who plays in the All-Star game? All-Star?
Like an All-Star. Again, this is crazy, and I don't even know why I brought it
Not
up.
Not like voted in as part of some, like, internet ruse that, like, catches fire.
No. Like an actual All-Star, like, all-NBA-level player. It's one of the greatest threads in internet history. All that aside, Hartenstein, you just feel like he will start at some point, mostly because Mitchell Robinson will like get injured shortly. But he, along with Jalen Brunson, are the two like greatest additions in recent Knick history that I can remember. Please tell me why that is the case. I just want to hear it. I just love it. They're not going to be a good team. They're going to be fighting for the play-in, but it's the vibes, again, are wonderful right now around that squad.
A lot of leftiness going on.
It's like almost all leftiness.
Yeah.
No, I mean, having guys who actually know how to play basketball on the team is like a nice little twist.
It's a weird concept.
It's not the type of move that the Knicks have been known for making. Let's say, you know, they've gone for shinier objects mostly.
Yeah.
But also Brunson is 26, Hartenstein's 24. Like, they're going to be around for a while. So I think it's not your typical like 33-year-old veteran Knicks free agent pickup. So I think it's exciting because of that. So New York has done a lot of things right in kind of this Rose era rebuild. But they still kind of need that centerpiece, that big fish. Like Julius Randle is not that guy, clearly. I don't think RJ Barrett is going to be that guy. He'll be a good player, you know. Same with Brunson, but they kind of need a guy who's going to be one of the 10 best players in the East, at the very least, to be kind of the centerpiece of that team. And then I think that's the point where they turn into a team where their depth really pushes them forward, when they have star talent and depth as well. Because right now they're just like 10 decent to good players, which, you know, kind of gets you in the middle of the pack.
Now, John, some pundits have said Cam Reddish is that guy. Some, you know, pundits with like really good hair and maybe like an amazing. Yeah.
A lot of people here in Atlanta have been talking that one up. Yeah.
A lot of people here in this Zoom box right here have said that Cam Reddish is that guy. So, you know, I think they maybe have him, but Tom just has to play him more.
Yeah.
Let me just say, so he started the season strong and it's been fantastic to see. He, for every like incredible, like gifted play he makes offensively, where he just kind of like instinctively knifes into the lane after getting an offensive rebound or steal or whatever, it's accompanied by two or three plays where he's just like, where's my guy? I forgot about him. He's like, yeah, what am I doing on defense? Where am I supposed to stand? Oh, over here. And you can actually watch all of that play out. Like, if you just watch him. And
he's middle management J.R. Smith. Like, he just like.
Lots of dribbling misadventures, too.
Any other surprises over this, you know, this early part of the season? I guess we should talk about the Lakers.
Yeah.
What actual positive option do they have, if any?
A, just counting on the fact that, okay, even if we're bad at shooting, we can't possibly be this bad, right?
Okay. I mean, they're shooting open shots and missing them because people are just leaving them alone.
Yeah, they're wide open shots.
Like, setting aside Westbrook, okay? Like, LeBron, 26%. Lonnie Walker, 17%. Pat Beverly, 21%. Austin Reeves, 28%.
Yeah.
Kendrick Nunn, 23%. Like, surely they're capable of better than that, right?
I mean, I don't know, John. It looked pretty bad.
Well, John, thank you so much for joining us. Can't wait to talk to you again. And of course, we're going to be following everything you do over the course of the season, because you're one of the greatest to ever do it.
Oh, stop. Thank you.
That's it for us. Follow and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe to Take Line Show. Check out my pop culture and entertainment podcast, X-Ray Vision, which comes out every Friday. Check it out. Goodbye. Take Line is a Crooked Media production. The show is produced by Ryan Wallerson and Zuri Irvin. Our executive producers are myself and Sandy Gerard. Engineering, editing, and sound design by the great Sarah DeBalaska and the folks at Chapter 4. And our theme music is produced by Brian Vasquez. Mia Kelman is on the Zoom for Vibes, and the Vibes are fantastic all the time.